You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to TCRG to CEO Radio. I hope your Aractus season has concluded and you're happy with how everything has gone. I can't be more proud of how our Aractus season went this year and the weekend we were able to have. And I just hope to share that same feeling with all of you out there that listen to the show. Today's episode is going to be something completely new and different, but it's the type of content that I'd really like to listen to. And I'm hoping that the teachers and choreographers out there enjoy this episode. And I'd also really love to hear feedback about this one. If anything resonates with you, if there's any questions that come up, or if you have any opposing viewpoints, I would absolutely love to chat about that more in either my Instagram DM inbox. I will leave my handle in the show notes, or you can email me directly and that will be in the show notes as well. This is going to be the first of probably a small series of choreography chronicles, because with the conclusion of Aractus season, for a lot of us, that means starting to switch over dances for the competitive season. We have St. Patrick's Day coming up. And the way I've run things at my studio are, once the Aractus is over, we have a small group of dancers that is keeping their steps and what they've already been working on for the World Championships or the All-Irelands. But the majority of students are really excited to switch over their dances. What we've also done since, I think 2017 is the first year that I introduced this, so it's been a number of years, is the winter season brings a very special class and probably my favorite of the year. It's our performance class, and it's open to students in essentially advanced beginner and up. Typically, the dancer makeup is advanced beginner into prelim that takes the class. And what we do is we create two special pieces for that year's St. Patrick's Day performance season. One of them is a halftime performance piece, so a piece that will be done on the basketball court at halftime during the game. And obviously there's certain needs for a piece like that versus something that would be done on a small scale or something where the audience would be seated at the same level of the dancers. In a halftime show, the audience is seated above the dancers, so it creates a few different visual opportunities that you might not otherwise get to play around with. But we also create a special piece that we can use at any St. Patrick's Day performance that we do. Typically, we have anywhere from 30 to 40 on our calendar that month. And this is something where the dancers get really excited about learning something new. And I really try to bring something new to the table every time, whether it's new music instrumentation or timing or something they can learn through the music, whether it's introducing new dance styles and maybe steps that they've never gotten to play around with before. And this series, or this episode of the series, is going to be focused on my current performance choreography that I'm working on for this class. So again, I've never done an episode like this. I'm really excited to share and talk about it and also kind of have a record of how the process goes and how it develops over time, because we haven't started the class yet, but I do have the piece pretty much done. And I'm really excited to see how it develops, where it might change from my original vision. And I hope, again, that this is content that you'd be excited to listen to as well. So that's where we're going in this episode. I might extend this series into competitive steps and sets if people are really into that. Again, you can let me know by contacting me directly. I'd love to hear from you. Now, this class that I run is inspired by my advanced ensemble class that I was able to take at the University of Limerick in my final year. I was really, really lucky that Brendan Degali was the artist in residence at that time. And he was working on his show Noctu, which you can see a few videos of on YouTube. I will try to remember to link them because it's just really cool. I really love Brendan. He was my favorite teacher I've ever probably worked with because he had this ability to take what the vision was in his head and describe it and show it so well that we could all get on board with that vision and like embody it is probably the best word I can use. And I think that is a really, really special skill. And the pieces and creative, you know, visions that Brendon has are really out of the box. Like, they're not things that you'd normally be familiar with. They're not movements that you'd normally be doing. So the fact that he's able to teach and kind of get everyone on board with that vision in the way that he does is absolutely incredible. And Brendon's impact on my ability to teach and communicate vision, and I'll never be able to do it as well as he does, but the impact that he has made on my teaching and even just the way that I think, I will never be able to truly like share and thank him for. And in this advanced ensemble class, we were sat down at the beginning and basically said, if you sign up for this class, we're treating it like you are a professional production. So if you get injured, you fail the class. If you miss class, you fail the class. And obviously this is quite unusual, but also they explain the rationale that, you know, you're all final year college students. Some of you have aspirations to go on tour or, you know, become professional dancers. And we're giving you this opportunity to take this class and do it in this way so that you're prepared for what the expectations of the industry are. If you don't show up to rehearsals, or if you have some sort of conflict that you haven't worked out and you miss the class, consider yourself fired from the tour. Consider yourself fired from the production. You know, you have to be reliable. You have to be dependable. And same with if you were to suffer an injury, yes, it might not be your fault or it might be out of your control that you have an ill-timed injury. However, a company might not pay to carry you around because you're not actually able to work. And those were the parameters of the class. So with all that said and explained, we signed on to work with Brendon in this advanced ensemble class. And again, just the level of expectation right from the get-go was very clear. It was a high standard, of course, but knowing, you know, you're going in eyes wide open, we knew what we were in for. And what we were working on was Brendon's Rite of Spring piece from his show. And if you're not familiar with the Rite of Spring, it's a Stravinsky piece that was originally introduced as the like musical score for a ballet piece, the Rite of Spring. This goes way back. Again, I'd have to check my college notes. It's been a long time since I've like really studied the Rite of Spring, but it's a really cool, I think it's really cool anyway, ballet piece. And it's not ballet the way that we think of it and see it now. It's like much earlier, and I love it. I could sit and watch it all day. And the music is really cool. It doesn't have a like even steady beat or even time signature the whole way through. It changes a lot. So when Brendon was introducing us to the music, you know, he was telling us that the only way you're going to understand this music and, you know, the timing and the counts and the cues that you're going to need to know are you just need to know the music inside and out. There is no shortcut. There is no hack. So I could probably still hum or badly sing the melody and like tune of the Rite of Spring passage that we used because of how like how much we listened to it over that year that we spent working on this. And I do apologize if my voice sounds weird or if you pick up a couple little coughs. I of course came home with a post-Oroctus cold because, you know, that's just how it goes. So again, going on this adventure with Brendon and my classmates was incredible. And it didn't exactly inform how I choreographed at the time, but to take you back to that time of my life and like that early point of my, you know, transition from dancer to teacher is, you know, we came up with pieces for our dance exams every semester. we had three or four. We would work with whoever our primary dance teacher was at the university during that semester. And I always felt like there was a huge expectation to come out with these really creative, really amazing pieces. And early on, I was really intimidated because I never got to kind of work my brain in that creative way. And I didn't feel like I had it in me to be that creative or to create pieces that were interesting and dynamic and had like story to them. And for a really long time, at least the first 2 years, if not even going into the third year, I really doubted my ability to pull that off and do it. When I look back at my exam pieces now, they're totally fine. Some of the ideas are really cool, but I didn't have the belief in myself that I could really do it. So my choreography skills definitely developed over time while I was at school, getting a little bit better at it every semester, you know, taking new ideas and feedback, and, you know, being surrounded by so much inspiration all the time is also a huge value add of just being there. And kind of from my middle of third year, I would feel like, to my fourth year, and now as a teacher getting to choreograph all this, I have found that I have developed the skill to the point where I feel like I'm good enough at it where I believe in my ability to create something new and different that challenges people. And every once in a while, I'll think to myself like, oh, you know, is this piece, you know, different enough? You know, do I rely on some of the same patterns or do I rely on some of the same formats, you know, too much? And at the end of the day, everyone's going to have their own choreographic style. And I'm doing an exercise with my champ class right now to kind of break them out of that. And I won't talk about it in this episode. If we do a competitive step episode, I'll mention it there, going more in depth. But this class, the performance class that I run in the winter, helps me, you know, work those creative choreography muscles in coming up with pieces that have different elements that push dancers out of their comfort zone, because that was a huge part of being in that advanced ensemble class for me. And it lets me kind of have that creative outlet to create something that either tells a story or is just art or is just beautiful. And some of the pieces that we've done in the past were, we had one that was based on slides, which is like social dancing, but to slides, which are, in Irish dance terms, probably like a single jig, sort of, I guess, is how I would describe how it sounds musically. We've done a cool waltz one. I've done, last year's piece was the Clatta, which I will consider linking as a video. Maybe, you know what, I'm going to put the video of the Clatta in our Facebook group. So if you are in the TCRG to CEO Radio Facebook group, I will put a video of last year's piece, the Clatta, in the group. That way it's kind of not just like out there floating around on the internet. It's like in a group that I've vetted. So that'll make me feel a little bit better about sharing it, I guess. So that brings me to where we are now, which is this year's piece. So the brief is performance choreography for that advanced beginner-ish to prelim dance group. Typically, it's between 12 to 18-ish dancers that end up taking the class. And we're creating both a halftime show and a small ensemble piece to be used at St. Patrick's Day performances. In this episode, I'm going to talk about that small ensemble piece. So some obvious challenges here are the disparity in dance level. We have, you know, advanced beginners that don't have a lot of vocabulary to work with. They might have their skips and their sevens and some, you know, jig steps and some real steps, but they might not have a lot of Kaylee experience. They might not have a lot to pull from in other, you know, even musical styles in within Irish dance, never mind outside of it. Then you have your prelim dancers that, although they have a lot of choreography knowledge or, you know, vocab to pull from, they also probably are very locked into dancing a certain type of way, right? A very competitive way. So it can be a challenge sometimes to like let them relax out of that and break out of it a little bit. Because of the disparity in levels, it typically brings a disparity in ages, which then causes a disparity in heights. So it's one thing that I don't spend a ton of time trying to work around. I kind of just have learned to embrace it. And typically it works itself out in certain groupings that we, you know, rehearse with or that they kind of use while we're at a performance. But those are the few challenges that I know going into this. So now I'm going to kind of walk you through the creative process that I've used to come up with this piece. And where I start is actually sourcing music. The music leads the choreography for me. And I'm curious how many other people are like this, or if some people lead with the choreography and are trying to find music that really suits it. For me, I've tried to explain this to people, and maybe some of the listeners will understand what I'm saying when I say this, or you can tell me that, like, that's crazy. When I listen to music, I can see it visually through movement. So, for example, if I'm listening to, I don't know, a Bioga track, I'm listening to the music, but I can visualize the choreography that would go with it. And it just comes. It's not something I have to think about. Like, as I'm listening, I can see it. It's kind of like when you read a book and you are in your head visualizing, you know, the setting, the characters, what's going on as you're reading. To me, that is what listening to music is like. And again, you can tell me if I'm crazy, or I would love to know if other people are like that too. So when I find a piece of music and it just hits, it inspires me, it's danceable, it feels right, I kind of know that I'm off to the races. Now, I had a couple ideas that I was bouncing back in my head for the kind of storyline or creative framework for this piece. I really wanted to incorporate something as a nod to the World Championships being in Scotland this year. So I thought, okay, maybe we're going to end up using a fling, or maybe we're going to end up using something that has, you know, a lot of like heavy pipe instrumentation in it. So I started by just kind of taking all of my like Scottish bands that I could think of in my head. I started with Elephant Sessions. I started with Rura. I ended up at Monrun. And Ryan Murphy of Monrun is actually one of my classmates at UL. And I kind of just started with musical groups that I knew had heavy pipe influence. And wouldn't you know, that led me, you know, after many, many hours of listening to music and just adding to library, starring as necessary for pieces that I thought, okay, I could use something here. I also typically edit music myself. Like I'll customize the track for what we're doing, whether that means, you know, taking a section out here or fusing two different tracks together, something. I've done that for one of our pieces before, and I'm very proud that I got to use my music editing skills from college, because I really didn't think I'd ever use them. And finally, I found the right music, and I was like, this is great, perfect. What I settled on, and this is a spoiler alert if you end up being in my performance class, the music that we're running with is Scottish by Monrun. And a Scottish is a tune that typically is for a couple to dance like a particular type of step to. If you go ahead and Google Scottish, like you'll see kind of the basic step that goes to it. And I liked this because I do like to introduce new things to my students. This will be the first time I've ever worked with a Scottish. I'm actually really excited about, you know, introducing that to them and using some variations on that as we open that up. And then it goes into a much quicker tune that dancers will associate with a reel. So for a lot of reasons, it was a great fit. I will end up editing and, you know, crafting my own kind of track from that, that will end up being about 3 to 3.5 minutes long. That's about the length that I go for this small ensemble piece. And Scottish is not actually a Scottish dance, but I digress. That was an element that tied in really nicely. And then it took me a little bit of like, okay, so, you know, I have this music. What is the story or the, you know, creative framework really going to be? And eventually I decided that it's going to be a thistle because, you know, many of you have seen the thistle on like the All Scotland's logo, or like, I'm sure it's going to be on this World Championships logo, because it's a symbol of Scotland. And in kind of diving into it, a thistle also symbolizes longevity, and it's my studio's 10th anniversary year this year. So that feels like a really fitting, appropriate kind of nod to both of those, like, I guess, the future. So as you can see, this is kind of how all the ideas like diverge and not diverge, converge, right? Is that the right word? They come together, and now I have like a few things to kind of play around with. And like, as I'm visualizing choreography, you know, I have these reference points to kind of pull back from. And kind of the things that develop over time are, how many dancers is this for? I mentioned it's a small ensemble piece. So for me, that can be anywhere between 3 and 6. I'm one of those people that really does love threes. Threes is the most visually pleasing number. Like, if you know, because you always have someone on the center, someone on the right, someone on the left. But eventually I settled on this dance. This piece is going to be for 4 dancers. And we're going to use that thistle image kind of for some of the arm work and patterns through the dance. We're going to incorporate the traditional Scottish step. And that's kind of the jumping off point for the piece. Now, we have our work cut out for us because we have 10 to 12 weeks typically in this performance season to learn the choreography, polish it, practice it. And again, some of these dancers are really young and some of them are in advanced beginner-ish. So I set the expectation for the class the same way that we did when we kind of sat down with Brendan and our course directors for the first time. And, you know, I let everybody know that this is an ensemble piece. We can't work on it unless everyone is here. So unless you are like really, really sick, you need to kind of plan on not having any conflicts. You know, this isn't the 10 to 12 weeks to like go to weekday birthday parties or, you know, try to avoid those like random concerts or random vacations during this period, because we need everyone here and kind of fully invested in this piece. The other part that I lay out from the get-go is that it's going to be a quick pace of learning. And part of that is that we don't reteach sections. So let's just say we do the opening, I don't know, 48 bars 1 week at class. I will take videos that we post in our Google Classroom so that the dancers in that class can like reference and go back and watch. And the expectation is they are going to go back and watch, and they're going to practice with those video resources during the week, so that when we come back to class the following week, I don't need to reteach that 48 bars. We can clean it. They can ask questions about it, you know, good specific questions. And then we can move on to the next thing. And sometimes it takes everyone a couple weeks to really understand what that means and just how quick the pace of the class is going to be. But it's something that we really do need to stick to with such a tight timeline to get it done. So the other part is that once we've finished learning the piece, this is the small ensemble piece, what the expectation is for me, and I have this expectation in Kaylee's as well, that I know that you know the piece when I can put you in any spot. So I mentioned that last year we did a piece called The Clara. The Clara had one position in the center that was the crown, And then we had the heart and the hands as the two, like, side dancers. And once we finish the piece, it's cleaned, it's practiced, I start rotating dancers through each of those positions. Because when we go to a St. Patrick's Day performance, there's no guarantee that I will have, you know, three, each of those positions. I might walk up to the performance and we have three crowns. And those crowns figure out how to get into each of those positions. They essentially do like a little, you know, lineup and rehearsal at the performance and make sure they're good in the spot that they're going into. And that to me is incredible. I have so much pride in when we finish all this. And sometimes it's, sometimes I worry that I was over ambitious and that we're not going to make it to the finish line. But when I watch these kids perform the performance pieces at a show, and it doesn't matter if it's for a nursing home, a library, you know, a concert, it doesn't matter where we are. When I watch these kids put their work out into the world and, you know, watch everyone enjoy it, and I know how hard and long the process was to get it there, I'm always so, so proud. So that's kind of, I guess, a walkthrough of where the choreographic process is at right now. We haven't started rehearsals yet. Those start in 2 weeks. So what I think I'll do is I will kind of update this choreography chronicle diary once the piece is underway, so that I can kind of update everyone, like, how it's going, if I have changed course at some point. Another thing that sometimes happens is I'm like this, whether it's performance or competitive steps, or even Kaylee to some extent, is I support dancers doing movements in a way that feels good and natural to them. So I might have a certain vision, or I might teach something a certain way that I think that's how I want it to be done. If I see people really struggling with pulling it off, or someone does it in a way that looks much more natural, I'll ask them to do it again. And if I think it accomplishes the same vision but is more natural to the dancer, I will have everyone do it that way. So sometimes when we get underway with actually learning the choreography, there will be subtle tweaks like that as we go. So I will update on that. We also have the halftime performance piece that we work on simultaneously. And our halftime piece this year will be about 8 weeks into that 11 or 12 week block. So we start with that piece and kind of have it ready first. And I do have a structure that I kind of work with that I have grown to like over time. I do change up the halftime piece every single year, but a lot of the patterns and things I've just found work well, and we do incorporate a lot of Kaylee elements as well. So that piece is also just as fun, but I do like to kind of stick more to a structure on that one. So if there's any crazy changes, I will let you know. And then, of course, I will let you guys see this finished piece once it finally makes it to the stage in March. So if you haven't already, join the Facebook group for the podcast. It's TCRG to CEO Radio on Facebook. It's a group. You can just request to join. I love when you fill out the questions, like, because it asks, like, what's your favorite episode? Like, what would you like to hear more about? And I do save those. And I've had ideas for future episodes because of those answers to the questions. So please go ahead and fill that out. And then I will drop in some of those past pieces so that if you want to see what I'm talking about in the type of pieces that I like to create, I will let you see them there. So best of luck to our Southern Region friends at their Aractas this weekend. Best of luck to all of you. And I will see you next week on TCRG to CEO Radio. Bye.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.